Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You will also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club. And get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Welcome to part two of the big interview with Jason McAteer of Bolton, Liverpool, Blackburn, Sunderland, Ireland, famously of Ireland. In this episode, we're going to talk about some really big names. Jason played alongside Roy Keane for Ireland for 8 years and against him in the Premier League midfields for the same period. Roy, well, yeah, he's a complicated boy. Jason experienced both the good and bad of life in that orbit. And Mr. McAteer's hero growing up as a Liverpool fan was King Kenny Dalglish. Therefore, I ask you, picture the scene. He's in King Kenny's office at Blackburn Rovers, yet a £9 million deal for Jason and his Bolton teammate Alan Stubbs is on the table when the phone rings and it's Liverpool on the line. What happens next? Why? Wait, that's the wrong show. This isn't the Detective series. This is the big interview. And this is the very listenable Jason McAteer. Enjoy, and if you do, please tell people, friends, family, strangers in the street, strangers in the night, strangers on the shore. This is Graham and I approve this message. This is something that you need to want to do, but people will have asked you about Roy Keane in a number of different ways. But we went back and we looked, you played against Roy a lot. And one of the things that distinguished Roy was he always had to win in various different ways, whether it was the remote control in Wayne Rooney or on the pitch in a training, etc. I'd like it, if you can, Jason, to try and, in club games, or training in Ireland is different, but in club games, I mean in a competitive, when you had to go up against him, what were the things that Roy did that made him such a good player? Thinking about the way you talked about, you'll have surprised a lot of people about Kaká, about him working back, getting his hands dirty and trying to tackle, because the thing that caught the eye was what he did with the ball when he had it. But and I see a lot of people who played with Roy with Ireland have said these things about his character, blah, blah, but I'm more interested in your assessment of what he was like to go up against at his peak as a footballer, your peak and his peak as a footballer.
I think if you look at Roy when he was growing up, I mean, I don't know where the winning, from me, I told you before, you know, coming from a boxing family and the way my father was with me and what have you. I don't know that with Roy. I don't know where that winning mentality at all costs comes from. He could only tell you that. But if you look at his history as growing up, he was really small in comparison to his teammates. And, you know, for his age, he was really small. So, you know, I was very small until I was 15, 16. I was a late developer, and all of a sudden I woke up one day and I'd shot through the roof. And I think Roy, it was a similar story. But, you know, from my experiences of being small and playing football at an early age, is you've got to learn to read the game. You've got to learn to read it. And you know, the first 10 yards is in your head. I know it's an old cliche, but it is. You know, you if you can see it and you can get there first, you know, then you're going to win the ball. And you've got to learn that. And I think that comes with obviously being small. He physically couldn't compete. Maybe he wasn't as quick. So he had to read the game to get there first. And, you know, one thing that he had, or one of the best attributes that he had, was he was able to read the game in a manner which, you know, for me, made him one of the best midfielders in the world. He always seemed to be in the right place at the right time, whether it was scoring big goals like Juventus or breaking tackles up or, you know, lending a hand, doubling up or whatever it may be. He always seemed to read the game really, really well. I think I learned more playing with him and being around him rather than playing against him. I didn't fear him playing against him because, you know, I always had the attitude, you don't fear anybody on the football pitch. You give as good as you get, and doesn't matter if everyone says he's the best, you've got to show everyone that you're the best. So I never feared him. And I come up against him with Sunderland. We were a lot older then, and our relationship was quite weird. We weren't mates initially. We had difference of opinions early on. We were young. We were a little bit immature, probably, the pair of us, and different things we did. Then we got older and wiser and more experienced and realised that there was a tribalism between Liverpool and Man United. So I think we had to dislike each other because of that. So we did. And then I, you know, as I then we go get into our later careers, you know, I knew what button to press, you know, to wind him up. I just knew how to get to him. And I think that Sunderland Man United game, you know, I got in his head. I really got in his head. And like I said, it was all about winning. I said a few things to him to gain an advantage. I gained the advantage. I set the equaliser up. He ended up elbowing me in the side of the head and getting sent off. And I walked off smiling. So, you know, I felt the job was done. But what I learned from playing with him is, in the dressing room before a game, he demands full stop. You do everything right. Like you give 100%. You don't shirk tackles. You roll your sleeves up. You get your hands dirty. And, you know, he just demands it. And he's, you know, if he tells you off, you know, you're getting told off.
But that would sit well with you, Jason. That it feels to me that idea about doing things right, doing things to 100%, that would have sat very easily with you. I wouldn't have thought there was much to teach you in that, because you had that.
Mate, I loved him, and we were very, very similar, because I seen this winning mentality, and I had that winning mentality. But where I'd kind of disagree with that, right? So I've got this thing, right? So we used to stay in the airport hotel in Dublin. We used to stay in this, I'm going to use the word poxy. It was like a home from home, but it weren't glamorous. It weren't no Ritz, put it that way. And we used to train on a muddy pitch out by the airport. And Jack used to name the team, mate, or try and give some tactics. And the, you know, the 11:15 from Liverpool would be coming into Dublin, like 40 foot above your head. You couldn't hear who was playing or like what was going on. And it'd be like, did he just say I'm playing on Wednesday? I couldn't hear. And it was like, mate, and like we, you know, England would be swanning round in the latest Umbro tracksuits, mate, that were like $1 million. We'd get the shit they didn't even want to wear, Ireland. We'd walk around in that shit, you know what I mean? It'd be like the dog and duck. But you know what, mate? I used to look at it and I used to think, that's what makes us who we are. That's what makes us who we are. If you give us the Ritz, if you give us the posh tracksuits and the posh training ground and the posh hotel, we ain't going to be the team that rolls our sleeves up against Croatia, against Brazil, against Italy, against Germany and beat them, because that's who we are. That's who we are. And where we differ was Roy hated that. He hated that. He wanted to, you know, be in the nice hotel. He wanted a proper training ground. He wanted to do everything right in that sense. And I disagreed with him. You know, I thought, you take that away from us, we become half a team. You know, we are who we are because of this. And, you know, we were like the dog and duck, but we won games. I get what Roy was saying. I do get it. I get it. You know, the World Cup stuff, 2002, I get it. Preparation could have been better. But it's not us. It wasn't us. So, you know, we weren't Man United.
We've got socials. We've got people who've supported us, who've been with us since day one, which by Easter will be 6 years. Two quick questions. One's from Chris Hennigan and the other one's from Robert McIntosh. Jason, Chris is, like many Liverpool fans, I was frustrated after we signed you. In theory, he's a midfielder. He says, an area at the time that Liverpool needed energy, dynamism, just intelligence. He said, you ended up at right wing back. Despite the big success in that role, many people from that era still feel it was a case of, what if you'd been more often a central midfielder for Liverpool? Do you share that? So that's one. Another one's shorter, but it's about Liverpool too. Robert McIntosh has got a good question here. And he says, from what you know now, are there things in terms of sports psychology you could have said to the Liverpool team around 96, 97 that might have got them over the line? Or were Manchester United just a little bit better as a football side? Two vaguely related questions, certainly in their timeline.
I mean, as you know in the game, I mean, elites, but it's fine margins, isn't it? It's such fine margins. We lost the FA Cup final because, you know, Eric Cantona scored a goal in the 84th minute. You know, it could have gone either way. It wasn't a spectacle. It wasn't a great game. And it certainly wasn't because we had white suits on before the match that we lost the game. You know, if we'd have won the game, we would have looked $1 million. We lost the game and looked $1 million lira. So it was, I think the sports psychology question, it has to be broader. I had a lot of counselling because I suffered depression when I finished. And now I'm talking to a sports psychologist and a clinical psychologist now, just because I'm interested and because of various situations. But, you know, I'm fascinated with it. I'm fascinated with how the brain works, how, you know, things can be affected, how you can affect things and how you look at things and how you can be given a problem and, you know, you got to find a solution rather than whatever. You know, so I'm fascinated. There was none of that, you know, mid-90s in football. It was probably the last thing to come in, you know, with the money, the diet, the sports psychology. It just wasn't there, mate, was it? It just, you know, wasn't offered to me. Where I think, and it goes right back to, you know, you said something right at the beginning of this about footballers. Mate, you know, I don't share this with a lot of people, but since we're on the sports psychology of sport and how footballers are perceived, I've got this big thing about footballers at the end of the day are just human beings. You know, we're very privileged because we do something we love and we got paid financially very well for it. But that doesn't take away the fact that we have the same problems as my mate who's a plumber or my mate who's an electrician or yourself who's a fantastic journalist. We all share similar problems, whether it's to do with our relationships, life, growing up, adolescent, whatever it may be, we have them same problems. I went away with Ireland and my wife, my girlfriend at the time was pregnant. She was about 9 weeks pregnant. And I got a phone call on the Sunday night that she was losing the baby. And I flew back. It was Sunday afternoon. I flew back Sunday night and we lost the baby. And I cried and cried and cried all night. And I got on a plane on the Monday morning and I flew back to Dublin. And the physio and the head of security, Tony Hickey and Mick Byrne, physio and head of security, were waiting on the runway for me. And I got off the plane and I cried my eyes out. And I went and met the lads who were at the pitches, because Monday night was pitches night. And I went in and I come out, Mick McCarthy gave me a big hug and he said, how are you? And I was in a state of shock. I went, fine. And I played on the Wednesday. You know, my girlfriend was all right. She had family around her and all that. I was in shock. I just didn't know what to do. I cannot remember the game. I can't remember the result. I couldn't even tell you how we played. All I remember is the pitches flying back. And that's it. And then being on the runway. They're the biggest things in my mind about that. And, you know, what I do take from that is I played in that game. There was 45,000 people there. They didn't have a clue. Not a clue what I'd just done. Not a clue. And they were, you know, they had their opinion about how I played, their opinion about who I was, this, that, and the other. Not a clue what had just happened to me. Not a clue. And I had to, you know, I was young. I was about 27, maybe 28. You know, and I had to get through that on my own. I didn't have a clue, like, how to deal with that, the emotions of that, like, what you know, what effect it was going to have on me. I was upset. I didn't know how to deal with it. You know, there was no psychologist around. And I just remember thinking, no one's got a clue what I've just been through. And they all just judge me now about my how I play and how much money I earn and all this kind of stuff. And I am just like everybody else who that happens to. And, like, I don't know how to handle this. So I think in them respects, I think, you know, sports psychology is massive. I think it's there's a place for it. I think just for, you know, adversity like that, I think for social media, I think for young lads who don't know how to handle certain other situations. And I think it's paramount to get the best out of sports people, elite sports people to deal with. But, you know, at the end of the day, what I'm trying to say is we're human beings. We're just human beings.
Even though it's a long time and you've chosen to share it, I'm really sad about you having to go through that. It's one of the worst things that any human being, male or female, can go through. At the time, were you even, because again, we're of different generations, but a lot of men who are my age, we're not taught to share anything that's painful. Had there been a sports psychologist, it's not simply that you wouldn't have had adversity on your own. He or she, the sports psychologist, might have counselled Jack or whoever, should play, shouldn't play, it's a good idea, it's a bad idea. But would you have been in a condition, would you have been able, would you have even thought about speaking to somebody back then? Because I see it in footballers, it's any admission of weakness. Even now, I think people in your position feel it's dangerous to admit pain or sorrow because it's seen as a weakness. And the culture was pretty toxic then, I think, about admitting, lads, I'm in pain.
Absolutely, mate, absolutely. I went back to you know, an Irish squad that was very close bunch of lads. You know, I felt comfortable being around them. I think that was my comfort zone. I wanted to get back with them. You know, people go, you know, I speak to some of my mates and go, how did you go back and play? It was like, I never went back to play. I went back to be with my mates. It was like, all right, the teammates, but be back with my mates. The physio and Tony, they're on the runway and they just cuddled me and I'm crying my eyes out. It's like, you know, but the dressing room is a very harsh place, mate. Yeah, it's like there was no place to, you know, to discuss mental health problems. Why do I feel this way? I can't understand why I feel like that. You couldn't do that because you were frightened of losing your place in the team. You were frightened of being sold. You were frightened of being different. You know, it was just one of them places. I mean, you know, we were young lads. Like, I was 25 playing for Liverpool, trying to win the Premier League on 25 grand a week, which sounds great, but that comes with its own pressure because everyone wants a piece of it and you don't know what to do with it. You know, 5 years earlier, I'm earning 100 quid, you know what I mean? All of a sudden, I'm like, bloody hell, it was like mental. It's just like, how do you deal with that? You know, that is a nice thing to deal with, but obviously, you know, the pressures of winning at that age is immense. But I wouldn't know, mate, back then, I didn't even know what a therapist was or a counsellor or a sports psychologist was. It was just never, you know, and to be, you know, to have a problem was just taboo to share it in the dressing room. You know, I might have shared things with Jamie or Babsy or, you know, on the QT, on the quiet, but I you know, you wouldn't want to get back to the staff or, you know, the senior players. Not a chance.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Hey, Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I don't want to be abrupt in my change of tone because you've been talking about serious, sore things. I'll maybe pick on our second sponsor's question and I won't guide you to the answer, but Alan Stubbs, I have to talk to you about. Their question is simple. Which player was the biggest influence in your career?
Oh, wow, that's a great question. I don't think there's any one player, you know, who made, you know, the impact. I think different players at different times added so much to my career. I mentioned him before, Andy Walker, you know, learning to link up with the front man, you know, his attitude, the way he trained, the way he was, you know, he taught me a lot. Andy, I'm a big fan of Andy Walker's, John McGinn as well, Barnsley, you know, even Roy Keane taught me a few things. Even though we're a similar age, you learn from players like that. Not one particular. I think if you were saying to me one person had the biggest influence, I'd probably go back to Bruce Rioch. But obviously, I never played with him. He was my manager. But he weren't a manager to me. He was like a father figure. He was just like a father figure.
Okay, with George Michael's music and father figure echoing in our brain, what links you, Dennis Bergkamp, and Roberto Carlos?
Bruce Rioch.
Why?
Arsenal. Because when Bruce, I mean, he left, didn't he? We'd got promoted and, you know, I thought I was going to leave before him and then he ended up going to Arsenal. And then my agent rings, obviously it's a Blackburn's involved, then Liverpool, they get involved. And then Bruce rings me, I'm at home. And Bruce just says, listen, I know you're a Liverpool fan. I'm going to try and persuade you to come to Arsenal. I want you and your mum to fly to London. We'll pick you up and just give me the opportunity to have a chat. He said, listen, I've got, there was four players he wanted. There was four players. I can never remember the fourth, but I do remember Dennis Bergkamp, Roberto. And this is the first time, one and only time I've ever been put in the same sentence as these two. Dennis Bergkamp, Roberto Carlos and Jason McAteer were the three players. There was a fourth, but I can't remember who it was. And he wanted to sign them four players. And obviously he was, you know, he tried to sign me. And I just said, listen, I'm going to Liverpool.
And why did fear of, people won't know who Steve Carroll is, but why did fear of Steve Carroll nearly land you in some sort of secure location? What is your background in causing a threat to Britain's nuclear industry?
You see, this is why you're one of the best journalists around, because you're very, very good at keeping everything sort of in a nutshell. And what I mean by that is you've asked me such a broad question there, but it all relates back to that mini Metro I bought for £2,000. So Steve Carroll was the reserve team manager at Bolton and we loved him. He looked like Freddie Starr, to be honest. And we had a game midweek. Reserve teams were like team games are Tuesday, Wednesday nights, aren't they? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights. Anyway, I picked the lads up from Aylward and Speak, and the arse was hanging out of this mini Metro, and we're on the way in for the game. And next thing, all the lights come on this mini Metro, all three of them come on, and it's obviously the car is like, it's giving up. It's like, I've had enough. I can't do it anymore. I just can't do it. So I see this sign, car park, And there was these, like, you know, the big chimneys that you see, the big massive ones, right? And they were there, and there was smoke coming out of them. So come off the motorway, see this sign, see this car park, just like razz into the car park. Park the car up. And like one of the lads is like, runs to the phone box, he's on the phone, he rings, I'm not sure whether it was he rings somebody who comes and gets us, his dad, or we managed to get a taxi, I can't quite remember that. So anyway, this car comes, we all dive in it, we all leg it, like we're legging it. So we got out the car, we're all legging it. So like next thing, we're like, we're in this other car, we go to the game, we play the game, just get in time. Steve's like on the clock, isn't he? It's like, just made it. We gets in. Might have even just been a little bit late. Plays the game. Anyway, we finishes the game. There's two coppers, right? We get called to the office. So there's two policemen come to see you. So we're like, oh my God, what's going on here? Like, first thing you think, like, family and all that, don't you? So we go in. And they're like, the cop, you can see them, like, they've like, they've put two and two together and they've come up with this, like, yeah, we know what's going on here. But they stay in, like, copper mode, policeman mode, don't they? So they go, could you just watch this video, like a video? So next thing, he like gets the video cassette. It's like tables there with the telly on it, the video, old video recorder. He puts it in, mate. It's this CCTV footage, right? It's like got all the numbers on the top and all, like they're grainy. You see the mini metro pull in, like next thing, I'm like, next thing, four lads get out. We're like that, running down. It's British Nuclear Fuels. And they think it's like a terrorist attack. We're leaving like this car and four lads are legging it. And then they've realised that, like, it's my name linked to the car and whatever, their phone got, and they've ended up at Bolton. And they realised, I've said, mate, my car's just packed up and we had to get to the game because Steve was going to finals. And they're like, what? So then they explained how dangerous it was. And from their point of view, they thought it was an act of terrorism. And
second time I've stood up for you in 5 minutes. Shouldn't it have been a little bit harder to get into the car park if it was a security?
Exactly.
I'd only say,
mate, I don't want to put it out there and I don't want to like put things in people's heads, but it's pretty easy. It ain't rocket science.
Actually it is, but never mind. Listen, I want to wrap up. You can choose if you speak about Harry's challenge. Stubbsy saying to you, we had a Tim Sherwood interview in the series, and Tim was on the train with his agent Eric Hall, who'd been an agent with Queen and Elton John and all this, and Eric Hall was taking him to Derby to sign for Arthur Cox, and Kenny Dalglish phones and says, come to Blackburn, and Tim has to say to Arthur Cox, I know I was going to sign, but Kenny Dalglish, and Arthur Cox goes to him, lad, I wish you had come to us, but I understand, it's Kenny Dalglish, off you go. Football doesn't work like that an awful lot. And your mate Stubbsy said that to you. This is a great story about friendship and saying, listen, Jason, if it's Liverpool, you've got to go there. That to me is extraordinary, Harry's challenge. And you can pick one of those to speak about, and then we're going to finish on sliding doors, because I have to ask you about sliding doors moments in life. So Harry's challenge, Stubbsy saying, I give you my blessing, go to Anfield. You choose, boss, you choose.
Yeah, I think the Stubbsy one, because it keeps with the Bolton theme and, you know, the cars, and we spoke about him. And Kenny, you just mentioned Tim and Kenny. You know, obviously I got that phone call as well. Yeah, mate, we get the phone call on the way into training. Our agent says, Blackburn have agreed £9 million for you and Alan. Can you turn the car around, go and have talks with Kenny Dalglish and Ray Harford in a hotel up the East Lancs? So that obviously that's £8.5 million for me and £500,000 for Stubbsy, innit?
I'm only letting you keep that in if you tell me how many times you've used that line.
Mate, all the time. Well, to be honest, mate, the figures never come out. I mean, everyone just assumes it was 50-50, 4.5 each. I'm not having it. Mate, I was miles better than Stubbsy. Anyway, and this is Alan, not Ray, I'm talking about. So we get up the East Lancs Road. We go into the hotel, agent's there, and we go in, and I go in first, and Stubbsy's a massive Everton fan. So obviously I'm a massive Liverpool fan, goes in, I'm having talks with Kenny. I'm like starstruck, man, I'm starstruck. It's like Kenny Dalglish sitting right in front of me. Not only sitting in front of me, wants to pay £8.5 million for me. So anyway, we're having these talks, he's telling me, like, he's trying to sell the club and what's going on to me. They just won the Premier League. Halfway through the meeting, my agent's phone goes. He goes out the room. So I'm like sitting here like that. So next week, he comes back in and he goes, Kenny, He said Liverpool have been on the phone. He said they want to sign Jason for £4.5 million. So Kenny just went, the deal's off. Deal's off. He said, I signed both players or none. So I'm like, whoa. So Kenny says, go and talk to Alan, see what he thinks. So I go out and I go to Stubbsy, listen, Liverpool have just been on, they've agreed £4.5 million. And I've got to be fair to him, mate. It's like amazing. He's just gone to me, you've got to sign for him. So he goes, I know you're a massive Liverpool fan. And I went, but Stubbsy, like, it's the two of us or none. It's like, you know, we both go to Blackburn. He goes, I don't care. He said, this is your opportunity to sign for Liverpool. And he went to me, he went, I know if it was Everton and the shoe was on the other foot, you would do it for me. I remember thinking, is he sure there's not a chance I would do that? There's not a chance. And I was like, cheers, Stubbsy, mate. And do you know the mad thing is, Graham, get onto this, right? The mad thing is, the week before, right, we were on Match of the Day, right? And we got interviewed after the game. And me and Stubbsy done the interview. And the presenter, the fellow went, so I believe that there's a transfer imminent with you two, like, leaving the football club. And I just remember Stubbsy going, watch this space. And then next thing, like, we end up having talks with Blackburn. I bin him. He has to go back to Bolton. I've buggered off to Liverpool. He come out, run out for Bolton. He got booed. The Bolton fans booed him. Mate, I'm like that running out of Anfield. Oh, Stubbsy. Oh, mate, it's brilliant. You couldn't buy it. You could not buy it.
Friendship needs to be a really elastic, powerful thing because it gets stretched at times. But he did you a square one then. Jason, this has been an experience which is exactly as I anticipate. And all the research I did made me think, yeah, I'm going to enjoy this, and I have. But I'm still going to close on a difficult one. 1963, this mad St Johnstone centre-forward goes to Ibrox to play Rangers. And I think scores three times. First time that any Scottish striker had gone there and scored three times. And it prevents him from emigrating to Canada. And his name's Ferguson, Alex Ferguson. And he'd been so sick of life in Scotland and how things were going for him in football that he'd got his papers to immigrate to Canada, and he ducked out of a midweek match for St Johnstone, got Martin, his brother's girlfriend, to phone in and say he was sick. And he got such a rocket from his mum and from St Johnstone that he went back, turned up for... You're in the first team against Rangers on Saturday, turned up, scores three, thinks, this is OK. And here we are later, he's Sir Alex Ferguson, and he's done all the things that have pissed you off over the years. You didn't go to Ohio, but Ohio and Tiffin John and so on was the moment when some sort of pressure went off your shoulders. You played brilliant for Marine, you caught Bolton's eye, and your life changed. Do you ever think, or if you do think now about, you know, because America was for you as well, if you think about the impact that World Cup had on you, do you ever think about Jason McAteer, you know, spent the last 30 years in the States, might have experienced, might have been like? I'm certain with what you've gone through, there won't be many regrets, so I'm not talking about that. But the sliding doors moment, if I just, let's say you hadn't played that brilliantly against Marino, you hadn't gone back because you're homesick, and you'd stayed out there rather than coming home for Christmas, and all the things that land of opportunity holds, the types of opportunities, the fact that they were going to provide a house for your mum, all that kind of stuff. Do you ever stop to think, or if you do think now, what would life have been like for Jason McAteer if the sliding doors moment had been the other way?
Yeah, I'd definitely been working in Hooters for a bit. I would have done that. And going to Disney every summer. Yeah, I mean, how it could have been so different. You know, I get asked that question a lot, you know, like, what if this had happened and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, innit? It's a difficult one. What could have been, you know, what, I don't know, but would I be sitting here, you know, talking to you? I wouldn't, would I? So I think you've got to thank or look at it that everything happens for a reason, and we are where we are. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was a tremendous opportunity. You know, I've been over there for 3 months. I come back, and like you say, I was just in the right place at the right time. It was, you know, it was phenomenal how it happened. It probably won't ever happen again. You know, a kid signing from non-league, 20 years of age, he's playing in the World Cup 4 years later, goes and plays for Liverpool, and, you know, it is that Roy the Rover story. Unfortunately, I've got no shiny stuff to go with it, but, you know, that doesn't bother me. I just look at it as, you know, what an opportunity I got given. Don't get me wrong, I worked hard. I'm not saying it was given to me, but I worked damn hard to get there, and like you say, you know, through plenty of adversity and knockbacks. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, mate. I had no idea. I was lost. I'd signed on the dole when I was 19. I'd signed on the dole. That's where I was at with my career. You know, I was playing local football, semi-professional for Marine, waiting in a pub, doing a graphic design course at college. I'd finished that. I'd nowhere to go. America was beckoning because of a scholarship, but I'd signed on the dole. So who knows? Who knows?
It tells you that dreams can come true. Your one has been a pretty impressive one. It's been good of you to share it with us. I don't need to wish you luck with your golf game, because the amount of practice that you put into, when you speak to yourself, I can see single figures, low single figures, handicap really soon. I wish you luck with the work you're doing on the mind. That's a long term, and it's an intricate project. It's good that you're doing it. I could do with it, maybe just because I'm older and more hidebound. I try to keep it all in. It's a bad idea, probably. But I wish you strength and success with that. And soon, I suppose, I wish you what you want in the world of sport, whether it be management, whether it be football director, whatever it is, more analysis. The football world is a better place with Jason McAteer in it. I've enjoyed it a lot. You've been generous. The big interview thanks you. I hope that it hasn't been boring. There you are.
It's been an absolute privilege, mate, and I'm glad that you've had me on. It has been brilliant.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true. Graham Hunter. And Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Here endeth the lesson.